But now on Radio 4, the science of paedophilia is a comparatively new and controversial area of study. But recent research is starting to widen our understanding and has implications for the way we deal with those with the condition. Matthew Hill has been investigating the nature of paedophilia.
This emergency. My spot's been kidnapped. Okay, what's the name of the child that's gone missing?
April.
We are desperate for any news. April is only 5 years old. Please, please, help find her.
Within the last hour, we have arrested a 46-year-old male from the Machynlleth area who has been detained at Aberystwyth Police Station.
The news in October 2012 of the disappearance of 5-year-old April Jones and subsequent arrest of her murderer, 46-year-old paedophile Mark Bridger. 3 years on, April's parents, Paul and Coral, spoke to me about their tragedy. Given their loss, their views are perhaps surprising.
I'd like to see a lot more help offered out to paedophiles. So if they feel like they might have that problem arise, then this might be a way they can talk their way out of it.
If they come forward and say they've got a feeling to get treated, and then hopefully they don't offend, and like a couple of children are saved.
There should be something. It needs debating and it needs looking into.
We'll be doing just that in this programme when we examine the science behind paedophilia and how our understanding has implications for the best way to manage the condition. I'll also be considering if perhaps our collective revulsion is getting in the way of protecting children from sexual abuse. But first, what do we know about paedophilia? The short answer is very little. Even its very definition has been hotly debated in the medical community. But it's broadly agreed to be an attraction to prepubescent children, rarely affecting women. Not all paedophiles commit an offence, and contrary to popular belief, only a minority of child sex offenders are paedophiles and have a sexual interest in children. So, how common is paedophilia? Well, there are very few studies and estimates vary. Dr. Sarah Good is a sociologist who's been researching adult sexual attraction to children since 2004.
The studies that have been done suggest that roughly one or two men in every 100 men will have a primary or exclusive sexual attraction to children. In other words, they would pass the clinical threshold for being a paedophile. But in addition to that, you're probably looking at possibly up to a fifth of all adult men who are capable of being sexually aroused to children under certain circumstances.
That's shockingly high.
It is. It is an extraordinary figure. One in every five men.
It was only when I saw a girl who was just under half my age that I realised that I was very much attracted to her.
How old was she?
She would have been about 5 or 6 at the most.
James, not his real name, just looks like your average 40-something and was extremely nervous when I interviewed him. He says he realised he was attracted to young girls when he was about 11.
And I liked her more than I realised until probably 3 or 4 years later when I was still thinking about her.
What's a sexual attraction?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, at first, I would say she was actually my sexual awakening. Up until that stage, I don't think I'd really had anything like that. It also started my lifelong cycle of depression because you can't explain it to anybody else.
You couldn't tell anyone at the time?
No, I don't think there's anybody you can tell.
The vast majority of research has been conducted on paedophiles in prison, but we know very little about those who haven't acted on their feelings. So Dr. Sarah Good carried out a study funded by the Arts and Humanities Research Council which involved being in contact with more than 60 self-defined paedophiles. Her aim was to find out how men who are attracted to children manage to avoid acting on it.
What I found was that there is evidence for this group of extremely hidden paedophiles who understand that sexual contact with kids is wrong and who choose not to act on that. What I also found was that paedophiles are not all the same, and they range from people who are absolutely convinced, for example, that a baby can give consent to sexual activity, right up to people who would agree with the vast majority of people, I think, in this country, that any kind of sexual activity with a child under the age of 16 is wrong. And the other thing that's very interesting to note is the amount of paedophile presence, if you like, that's out there on the internet. So you've got a whole range of websites, the sort that you would expect, again, which are kind of devoted to exchanging illegal images. But also, and I think this hadn't been noticed before, that there are paedophile websites which support and encourage people not to offend and to stay law-abiding.
I absolutely struggle to believe that if there was a God, he would willingly do something that completely screws up your entire life. I can find no scientific explanation that satisfies me. I think you are just who you are.
So you're born with it?
I think so, yeah.
Out of interest, are you left or right-handed?
Left.
Well, that left-of-field question may sound bizarre, but it relates to one of the key findings of James Cantor, psychologist and sexual behaviour researcher from the University of Toronto in Canada. In 2000, he started collecting data on the characteristics of paedophiles, but first he needed to categorise his subjects by using what's known as phallometry. It's a delicate area. I'll let him explain.
We attach what's essentially a blood pressure cuff to a man's penis in laboratory conditions. We show them pictures of nude adults, nude children, and we measure to what people respond.
Dr. Cantor used this classification in combination with neuropsychological testing.
The biggest and one of the most important, it turned out, findings was that we found there was a much greater proportion of people who were left-handed. Now, the brain controls handedness completely. So when we started finding substantial increases, in the normal population it's somewhere between 8 and 10%, but among the paedophiles it was over 30%, which is, in scientific terms, absolutely enormous. Now, the only way to explain that would be as if there is some major difference in basic brain organization. We also found that physically they're slightly shorter than non-pedophiles, which again was some indication that there was something physiological that was different about these people, and it was something related to biology and probably linked to before birth.
If something goes wrong in the first few months of a developing fetus, such as maternal stress or poor nutrition, it can cause damage to the dominant hemisphere of the brain. Functions such as handedness are then transferred to the other half. On the basis of this work, Dr. Cantor was able to get funding to do the biggest and first study of its kind using MRI brain scans to compare 60 paedophiles with 60 controls.
We were not expecting to find what we found, which was that there was a large difference in the connective tissue of the brain, of the white matter of the brain. That was entirely unexpected. Really, nobody ever paid any attention to the white matter of the brain. It was seen as just basic connective tissue and had no function of its own.
White matter are neurons that connect brain cells and link various parts of the brain together.
Turns out that there is no single sex center in at least the human brain. Rather, there's a sex network. The part of the brain that processes human faces is involved. The parts of the brain that controls human motor behavior is involved. The parts of the brain that control hormones is involved. So in retrospect, this should have been obvious, but nobody guessed it until we actually saw it on the brain scans.
In lay terms, he describes this as a cross-wiring in the brain, which causes paedophiles to evoke a sexual instinct when they see a child. Dr. Cantor has also just published some new data on physiological differences.
There are a series of anomalies that we call minor physical anomalies. These are just minor malformations of the skin. People with attached earlobes is one example. Webbing between fingers or toes is another example. They're really very minor. Most people have at least two or three of them. But it turns out that there's a difference in how they're positioned among paedophiles.
Then what's the practical purpose of your research?
Well, if we can find whatever starts the chain of events that leads to this change in white matter or wherever else in the brain it turns out, then we might be able to prevent it from starting to begin with.
Mark, not his real name, and we've also disguised his voice, is a paedophile in his early 20s who says he's never acted upon his feelings and is primarily attracted to boys aged 7 to 13. He always had a fascination with children when he was growing up, but when he was about 16, things changed.
I noticed that I personally was experiencing something while interacting with them or while thinking about them, and not necessarily sexual, but just romantic, emotional. I cared deeply for them. I would relate and identify with them. That was the first and most primary thing, and it still is the most primary thing. But later on, I would say 18, 17, I also started to notice certain thoughts which were physical and sexual.
Did that trouble you?
Absolutely, yeah. That was the most disturbing thing. I didn't know what to make of it. I didn't have any frame of reference. I just knew this concept of child abuse. I knew that the people who did things with children sexually, and I bent over backwards to try and disassociate myself from these people and say that this aspect of myself, where there was physical, sexual thoughts, it's not me, and my moral salvation, so to speak, would be the fact that I could criticize myself for that, that I could hate myself for those thoughts. That's how I dealt with it.
Mark kept these feelings to himself, but did come out to a close family friend, who suggested seeking help from a specialist clinic that deals with harmful sexual desires.
You hear this message that paedophiles are rotten to the core and that they are evil. And what I basically heard is that, okay, if society have the right to be so angry with me or so upset, then obviously there must be some sort of choice that I could make, which would be something that would take away these attractions. So I turned up to my first meeting and I broke down in tears. I was very emotional. I was like, okay, so what's the deal? And he was just like, well, there isn't really anything. And at that moment, I felt like my life had just, that was it, because I had built up this expectation that I could cure it. And then it was just all gone.
Next station, Hannover Nordstadt. Exit to the left in the direction of...
I've just boarded the S5 train at Hannover Station, heading towards the historic town of Hamelin. The tale of the Pied Piper has drawn tourists here to Germany for centuries. According to an eyewitness account, it was on the 26th of June, 1284, when 130 children were taken from the town by a piper dressed in many colours. Whatever the truth of the story, it reflects our preoccupation with the fear of losing children to a stranger, especially a paedophile. I'm in this particular part of Germany to meet some of the neuroscientists trying to understand the nature of paedophilia.
My name is Jonas Kner, and I'm a research associate of the NEMO project.
A male volunteer is confined in a giant donut of an MRI scanner in Hanover Medical School. He's about to have some images taken of his brain for a study run by NEMUP, a consortium of five specialist sexual medicine centres, which aim to look at the causes of paedophilia and why some offend and some don't. This government-funded large-scale study is the only one of its kind in the world and was started in 2012 after a series of child sex abuse cases in schools and churches.
So the key results are that the paedophiles had a slightly diminished intelligence, although it was still in the normal range.